This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
And we're on. Good morning.
Morning, kids.
Good morning.
It's 8:04 in the morning. You're listening to KBOO in Portland. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. There's a lot of talk going on. My name is Lynn.
We just can't stop talking. I'm Ani.
And we are here this morning with two of the organizers, Tiffany Ayers, who is the lead organizer, and Cassie Cohen, one of the other organizers for the March Against Monsanto this Saturday, in the rain or shine, right?
Yes.
Yes. So where, obviously this Saturday, which is what, the 25th of March?
Mm-hmm.
And
May.
The other M month.
The other M month. And what and where is this going to happen?
This will be starting at 11 a.m. At Holiday Park, which is by the Doubletree in the Lloyd Center. We'll have a rally from 11 till noon, and then from noon till approximately 1, we'll march, and then we'll be back at the park for another hour of rally.
What's the march route?
We go at Multnomah to 16th to Wheeler, down to 6th, back over to Multnomah, and then back up Multnomah to the park.
Okay. Ani?
Also, it's pretty much in the Lloyd area, then, just sort of in that northeast.
Circling the mall. Going past Safeway and Taco Bell and all the fast food places.
Well, let's back up now and tell the story of why there's an action against Monsanto. it always seems we start talking about things like corporate control of our lives, it's important to look at some basics. And food is a basic, right? For over a decade, we've been looking at Monsanto's practices of copywriting life, copywriting the stuff that is our food supply, hooking small farmers into an unsustainable system of agrochemical, agribusiness, and getting folks away from hereditary seeds and sustainable farming practices and into the palm of Monsanto, which then starts to control seeds. They do this through their genetically modified organisms. They do this through patenting seeds, like the ever-popular Terminator gene, that threatens to end life, more or less, on the planet. Let's back up and start talking about Monsanto and why tomorrow is the national action. This is national, right?
This is international. It's in 49 countries.
Wow.
There's 400 events in over 45 countries participating.
Okay. So an international day of action to draw attention to the policies and the practices of Monsanto. Let's just start out with why. Why has Monsanto been targeted as one of the corporations that the world needs to focus on right now?
Monsanto controls over 90% of the seed industry, and that they're basically above the law now, with the government passing the House Resolution 933, which was a funding to keep the government running for until October, I believe it is. There was a small passage, I think it was Section 735, that is now dubbed the Monsanto Protection Act, that gives the USDA authorization to allow farmers to go ahead and plant Monsanto seeds or GMO seeds in general, whether or not they have pending court cases relating to their environmental and health safety issues.
Now, there are stores around that don't sell GMO food, right? Can they really tell anymore? I remember years ago, what was it? It was Rage, the group Rage.
Resistance Against Genetic Engineering.
Right, where it had gotten, they had gotten many stores to sign on saying they would not sell GMO foods. But how do we know? How does anybody even know that they're not GMO?
There are a few...
That's called genetically modified organisms. Is it organisms?
Yeah, it's organisms or genetically engineered. It's basically the same thing.
You can look at your food packages, and usually people that are GMO-free will tout that. There's the GMO Project, and they have they're an independent agency that's actually one of the fastest-growing businesses. I think their annual profits like 200% in last year because of all the companies that want to get that seal of approval because they see the value of a market that wants organic food. So you can research non-GMO Project, and you can find... that's usually for processed foods. Otherwise, if you're just buying produce or things that don't need labels, you just buy organic.
Well, you can also read your the little code on your produce, and I believe if it has a 4, it's genetically modified. Like if it starts with a 4, if it's 9
is organic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what you're talking about is if you are going to the little self scanner and you have to look for the little code on your produce. Label the sticky that they put on every orange. I mean, this kind of drives me crazy in that way. But that code actually does tell you something about the product. And I remember years ago finding that 9 meant organic, and you're saying 4 is for genetically modified.
And then 8 is pesticide, is conventionally grown with pesticides.
Hmm.
There's also a speaker at our event, Mary Nichols, who heads up a project called GMO Free Portland, and I can't remember exactly what her website is, probably something like gmofreeportland.org. She voluntarily will help people shop and buy things that are GMO free, and she's also she helps counsel people on products that may be GMO free but have parent companies that are, you know, that are what's the politically correct way to say that? Parent companies that are not necessarily responsible, but just trying to put something out there to appeal to the market.
Mm-hmm.
That's GMOfreePortland.com.
Thank you.
Very good. Is there an umbrella website for, because there's so much information and so many people have different ways to plug into the, or parts to be of all of that. Is there like a big umbrella website for all of this sort of thing? At all? No, you're looking at me like
I mean,
just put these things in search engines, I'm presuming, and find them.
Organic Consumer Association is a good start. And yeah, I mean they have all sorts of information about what you can eat or companies to boycott, and also like legislation. I can't say that this early in the morning.
That's all right.
Legislative bills and things like that.
Well, and if folks come to this march tomorrow, they can find people to network with.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that one of the biggest benefits of this event is community building and finding a network of people like-minded that can share information. And also, one thing I'm trying to do personally is work towards gardening. I live in an apartment, and I'm trying to figure out how do you do this in pots. It's small steps for me. I have an herb garden this year. And we'll try to do tomatoes, but I'm really hoping to meet up with people that can be like, oh, well, all you need is, you know, getting tips from people on how we can be more self-sufficient and not be so dependent on an industrial system in the first place.
Absolutely, and Portland is just so amazing in that way.
Yes, it is. I'm so thankful for it.
If we ever get sunshine, things may grow again. certainly they are well-watered. I just want to let folks to know that this is Positively Revolting Talk Radio on KABU. I'm Lynn, here with...
I'm Annie.
Annie. And we are here with Casey Cohen and Tiffany Ayers of the Monsanto March, the March Against Monsanto, which is going to be happening tomorrow. If you've got questions or comments for either of them, we are a call-in show, and we welcome your comments at 503-231-8187. You can also email us if you're not interested in talking yet this morning at positiverevolting@gmail.com. And don't forget to like our Facebook page, which is also, oddly enough, Positive Revolting. So I was interested in how you two decided. I know for me, one of the things when I first heard about Monsanto was the case in Canada of the farmer fellow.
Percy Schmeiser.
Percy Schmeiser, which is just such a great name, who of Saskatchewan, who was somehow found that the Monsanto seeds had been blowing over to his organic.
He had a canola seed farm, I do believe.
I'm sorry. Yes. Rapeseed, I was saying that.
Well,
before.
Rapeseed, canola seed, it's actually the same.
Right.
And he, from my memory in the Wayback Machine, this was in the 90s.
Yep.
Excuse me. And he had been trying to grow conventional canola. And the Monsanto seeds from neighboring crops, because, of course, seeds pollinate through air, you know, right? The plants, I suppose I should say, pollinate. And the pollen got into his crop. So suddenly he's showing these gene traits. And he was upset about it. He didn't want GMO canola. But in fact, he's the person that gets in trouble for stealing Monsanto's intellectual property, I suppose.
And they're trespassing.
Right, right. Can you talk about that case and other cases like that? The farmer who is just there minding his or her own business when suddenly GMO crops invade their field via, you know, the natural methods of pollination.
Also, we've been talking about this, and it's up on the we have it up on our Google search engine. Superweeds have evolved from conventional canola plants that have taken on genes from three or four companies selling GM canola that have cross-pollinated and ended up in one plant.
Mm-hmm.
How's the Franken plants?
Yeah, they are. I mean,
and they need super herbicides to deal with them.
They're actually having to pour more and more herbicides on top of them when they. Monsanto and other agro businesses claim that the GMO seeds require less pesticides, but that's not the case because they're actually breeding super weeds and super bugs that are resistant to this. And this is like a large case in India right now where they have the BT cotton, and it's a systemic pesticide which is responsible for killing off bees and butterflies, but yet the boll weevil that it's supposed to kill off, it's not actually killing. And so the farmers are losing their crops and, you know, buying more pesticides and going into debt. And they have like a rate of suicide every 30 minutes due to their indebtedness to mm-hmm. Monsanto.
Absolutely. So we have some phone callers. I'd love to get to them in just a moment. But just to sort of follow up on that question, what protections actually exist at this time for a farmer who is attempting not to grow GMO, where they suddenly find crop contamination, like in the case of Percy. Percy lost,
yeah.
Right? Percy was found to actually have misappropriated, you know, Monsanto property by having it contaminate his field.
There aren't any. There was recently a farmer, a 75-year-old farmer in Indiana. I'm trying to find his name. I can't. But he bought some seeds from a local supplier, not knowing that there were second-generation Monsanto seeds in this. It wasn't labeled, and Monsanto found out about it and sued him for $84,000, I believe. And this was held up in court. There really isn't anything to protect them. And Monsanto will go after the farmer and basically bankrupt them anywhere. And
right. Okay, that's a good answer.
It's early.
It is, sort of one of those trick questions. I have a couple of those to say. Just to say, it seems only basic that there would be laws that would protect farmers from having their crops invaded by let's just say pollen they don't want. You know, that you know, you have your property, you have your growing your organic product, or even your conventionally grown product, really. It doesn't have to be organic. We're looking at anyone that doesn't want to use patented, genetically modified, genetically engineered seed. And suddenly, their right to do so is not only trampled, but they are criminally liable for the contamination of their fields by organisms that they don't want. And I think that that is something that really needs to be underscored. I that's not something that's talked about too much. And I really want us to have that resonate this morning. And just, to me, that underscores the insanity that is genetic engineering. It's not something that seems to be controllable, because evolution happens, science mm-hmm. happens, pollination happens, pollen drift happens. These are just basic principles of farming. And to say that there is no remedy or protection for the farmer that does not want to engage in this practice that, is pretty red flaggy to me and to many other countries around the world that has now said no to GMO crops or foods. I just think that that needs to be underscored. So thanks for not having an answer for that. That actually works quite well. It doesn't work for our world, but for information getting out there, yeah, that's exactly right. And that's one of the reasons that there's actions, like tomorrow's actions, right?
Yes. Absolutely. I think that's a great point you just made. Not only are there not protections for farmers who don't want the seed in their on their farm or mm-hmm. In their business, the Monsanto has gotten a hold of the government in such a way, this is outlined in Michael Pollan's Omnivore's Dilemma. There have been subsidies to grow corn and soybeans, most of which are GMO product. So farmers who unfortunately are undervalued in this country are, if they want to stay in business, they're encouraged to engage in these practices of farming these untested
subsidized crops
mm-hmm. And experimenting on the public. And I work with a lot of folks who kind of have moved to Portland from the farmlands of America, and when I bring up this stuff, it's pretty sensitive because this is their family business. And unfortunately, what I'm able to gather from these folks is the family business of farming has gotten very far away from food, because it's more about, if you want to stay afloat as a business person, this is what you do. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem to be that questioned, or it might be, but we have Monsanto coming at our food supply from so many directions, and those two specific directions. One, they're taking over the business and encouraging people to grow their product, and now they're they're protected from farmers who have their seed trespass onto their land.
Mm-hmm. We are here to take your call, to engage in dialogue. Talking about Monsanto, I'm Ani, I'm here with Lynn, and we encourage you to follow along online throughout the week, Positively Revolting on Facebook. If you go to facebook.com and you look at Positively Revolting, you can like our page and follow us. We have little tidbits throughout the week. We can keep dialogues going. You can also email us at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. And, of course, you can call in this morning with your comments and questions to 503-231-8187.
Jim has done.
Just like Jim. Good morning, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning, everybody. Thanks morning. So much for this show.
Sure.
I just wanted to call in. I worked, volunteered with the Measure 27 campaign, and also worked with Northwest Rage, and I'm really excited this march is happening. And I went on your Facebook page, Tiffany, yesterday, and saw there were 4,000 people signed up to attend the march. So yeah. I don't know.
It's over 4,400 now. 4,400. I'm sorry. There's over 4,400 now.
Yeah. So that's just jaw dropping. It's going to be a great Saturday. I can't wait. And so I'm going to come, and I want to encourage everybody else to show up, and anybody that's been involved in Clean Water Portland. I mean, maybe we ought to have Clean Food Portland. Just keep it rolling.
Yeah.
Because it's just as insidious to have these things put into our food supplies as having it put into our water. And it's bigger because it's global, but it's the same insult to everybody here. So I hope everyone shows up. I'm gonna possibly get to go and get a bio suit here in Portland, which is lots of fun to wear to these things.
Mm-hmm.
That would
in
be
the
great.
Rain, it's not a bad idea.
Do you know where to get them?
No, where do you get them?
Can I say that out on the air?
Please. Oh, please.
Business. Okay. So there's a business in Southeast Portland called Sanderson Safety Supply.
I think I've heard that from some other folks that have worn biosuits for certain things. Oh, good.
Sanderson Safety Supply.
They're about $10. So you can.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah, that's it.
Huh. All
so
right.
You can go pick one up and stand out in the crowd. So hope to see you there.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Thank you.
Bye. And 503-231-8187, the number to call.
You know what would be a great idea, too? It's too bad. It's too short a notice to have umbrellas for the occasion. For marches, instead of T-shirts.
Yeah.
Mm. For Portland to have umbrellas for the occasion.
As a native Portlander, I don't even own an umbrella.
I was going to say the same. However, I have seen them used to good effect in visual unity.
Overhead photos.
In marches. Yeah. You can spell things. You have to do a little arrangement.
Clever.
But, you know, just word up. All right. So let's go ahead, and I know the bases are really loaded. People want to talk about genetically modified organisms. They want to talk about corporate control and how to free ourselves, just like Chris. Good morning, Chris. You're on the air.
Good morning. I always love to start my day listening to powerful women talking about making change. So thank you guys for doing what you do.
It is our pleasure.
Yes. And, one thing that's, in talking about how farmers don't really seem to have any protections or rights, I think this is why we were seeing on the East Coast, is a little underreported in the corporate media, understandably. But, in Pennsylvania, with the organizing of the program on corporations, law, and democracy, POCLAD, where they started a community rights-based ordinance program, right? And these rural conservative communities were drafting ordinances, legally binding ordinances, that said, first of all, corporations are not people, and second of all, nature has a right to exist and to flourish. And on the basis of those two points, that puts the corporations on the defensive. Instead of folks like that Saskatchewan farmer having to go through the courts and get rejected every step of the way, now they're on the defensive, and they have to justify their activities instead of us having to justify why it's not okay for genetically modified pollen to blow onto our organic crops. And Paul Cienfuegos is really working hard here in Portland to build community rights-based legislation in local communities all throughout the state. And so I highly recommend folks get on board with what he's doing there and look at how we can start from the ground up to say, you know what, we are in control of our states, of our communities, and if you as a corporation want to operate here, you need to play by our rules, not the other way around. And the other thing was a question for you guys. I've been hearing something about this issue of canola being grown in the valley. And if you guys could speak to whether or not you know if Monsanto is at all involved in what's happening there. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Good morning.
We are fiercely Googling as we speak.
Yeah, I just recently heard about that. And I think what I heard was that there really isn't any organic canola anymore. Isn't it all genetically modified?
I don't know.
Saying that it's all genetically modified, I'm not entirely sure about that, but there is definitely, that is a crop that is very susceptible to that pollination drift that we were talking about earlier.
Right.
So once you release that GMO into the biosphere,
apparently the Oregon Department of Agriculture adopted a permanent canola rule Thursday, February 7th. I don't know what year this is.
I think that's this year.
This year, that has not provided sufficient protections for vegetable seed and fresh market vegetable growers and others opposed to protection in our truly rare Willamette Valley. So it doesn't look really out 2013. So this is about House Bill 2427.
All right. So we have...
But we got lots of callers.
We do. And I think there were probably other parts to Chris's questions. That was I was rather engaged. And anyone else want to comment on anything Chris said? we can move on to Marley.
I did like the fact that he brought up Paul Sanfuegos.
Yes.
Paul Sanfuegos will be speaking at the rally at 11:20 a.m. tomorrow.
Good. He's been on KBOO a number of times.
Yeah, Paul Sanfuegos has been an active participant in the broad-based movement to end corporate rule forever. I know that we worked together in the 90s somewhere, in the 90s to try to end this. And here we are, 20 years later, still trying to end this. I don't feel necessarily like Sisyphus, but and I am appreciating the fact that the movement is broadening at this point, especially as we look at particular cases like genetically modified organisms and genetic engineering in our food supply. That gives me some heart. So, Marlee, you are on the air. Good morning, Marlee.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's actually Marie.
Oh, okay. Hi, Marie.
Hello, and thank you for this lovely, lovely in-depth delving into the Monsanto tragedy. Yay for the coming up demonstration this Saturday. Hope we get double the number that's already signed up. Wonderful, wonderful work. And so I have three little points, and one point is I think that one of the million-dollar questions for us is, what about the school lunches? What about GMOs and school food? And so it's really a question to you all to give me more information, but I'll give you, that's point two. Point two is my quick envisioning of how they could totally go into GMO, and I don't know if this is too idealistic, but I think we need to be idealistic. And my idea is, and then three, it ties in, our governor is an MD, so I think Governor Kitzhaber should be called and challenged to let our kids eat the right food. And so my little envisioning is, for this fall, they could have a one-day organic day. They could have salad or vegetables one day a week in the school lunch program. And then our goal could be that by Christmas, by the January meals after Christmas, as many schools as possible could be GMO. I know that involves ordering in bulk months and months ahead of time, but I think it'd be good to put that dream out there and say, what about our kids? And the KBOO, the last point is that the KBOO program last week on GMOs, I myself knew for years how bad GMOs were, and I'd been eating at least 95% organic, but I didn't realize that GMOs cause genetic damage. So GMOs are not just bad, they are dangerous. So it's not right for us to feed dangerous food to our children. Thank you very much, and let me know what you all think of the school ideas.
Well, you know, first of all, school lunches are federal.
Yeah.
And they're just, I was listening to Democracy Now! This morning, and I believe a lot of those programs are going to be cut for, quote, fiscal reasons, unquote, that and food stamps. So,
yeah, that actually the farmers' assurance provision that is coming up, I think, cut like a huge portion out of the food stamp program.
And school lunches.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't want...
You don't want
it's
people so, to
it's
eat.
Fiscally Although, irresponsible for children to eat, apparently, so...
I school lunches have never been a good thing. I mean, they are good because
for some kids, that's
all they get to eat.
Right. They've never been high nutritive quality.
No.
Let's say that.
Ketchup is not a vegetable,
and
no.
They've always been kind of a Franken food and scary, but...
But, I mean, I think so that just really underscores the need for people that care about children's health, and you know, hopefully we do. To actually look at nutritive quality for food and how we are feeding kids. I'm afraid of that program going away because I remember being in school and I remember being a poor kid. And at least I did have other food during the day, even if I had my free school lunch, you know. But a lot of my friends really didn't, you know. So even if it was crap, it was food.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I think schools having community gardens would probably be a good way to address that issue. Greenhouses.
Levels.
I mean, then they could raise their own food. I mean,
and there is actually that's an idea that's catching on a little bit. There are schools around this area in the state of Oregon. You know, I'm sure elsewhere too. But I know Oregon a little bit better. That's where I live.
Well, Alice Waters down in the Bay Area has been working on that for a long time.
But it's it is sort of catching on that you can teach kids earth sciences. You can teach kids math. You can teach kids a number of things from gardening, and you can also then supply your cafeteria with actual food. I think that's a fabulous idea and something that we might want to look at a little bit more, spread it around. Right. So, speaking of spreading it around, we have more and more listeners calling in 503-231-8187. And you can call in with your question, with your comment to Tiffany, to Cassie. They are here from the March Against Monsanto. I'm like, there's a movement against Monsanto. There's an MAM, I know. March Against Monsanto, which is happening tomorrow, gathering at 11 o'clock at Holiday Park. Yeah? Okay. Good morning. Harvey, you're on the air.
Hi, Lynn. Hello, Tiffany and Kathy, and thanks. This is so important what you're doing. This is a great show and really important. I'd like to speak to the issue. Well, first of all, we are, you know, there's a saying, we are what we eat. And so if we are what we eat, then we're being genetically manipulated. The human race is being genetically modified. To what end, I say, we are the experiment. We are their lab rats, and they can keep track of our purchases by when we use credit cards, debit cards, store club cards, etc. Our purchases are tracked, and the information is sold to Monsanto, and they can keep track almost right down to the individual what you're eating. You know, they ate this crop, they ate that crop. They know what we're eating, and we are the experiment. And then they can sell the information to the medical industrial complex, because they'll know exactly what you ate, and they can tailor the medicines to you. This is really terrible. The human race is being hybridized, essentially. And I feel that we have to stop this. This is not right. And I say, just say no to GMO. The march is really important. And if you Google the words Occupy Monsanto, I click on the first website. There's all the information. That's where I found it. I don't know where you found it. But here in California, Monsanto fought really hard to stop GMOs. And they spent as much money as they could. They want to keep it a secret. And so I think the big secret is that we are the experiment. And so this march, that's why I think this march is so important. Well, thanks very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was a great comment and inspires me to want to talk a little bit about the experimenting on people. a large part of the reason I'm involved in this movement, I have a bit of an activist background. I was raised to eat healthy. We didn't really have organic when I was a kid. That wasn't a thing yet. But over the last 10 years or so, my own mother has developed something called multiple chemical sensitivity, which wasn't even acknowledged as a disease or syndrome until 2011. The World Health Organization, on May 13th, 2011, had a convention in Geneva to finally address this growing medical issue. And basically, the scientists that were present there determined that 12 to 15% of the world population has some kind of disturbance in the presence of chemical substances. It's a little vague, but it's a great first step in the medical community. Beyond that, they said that most of this results from an overexposure to organophosphate insecticides, which is basically
glyphosate.
That's the one.
Roundup.
Yeah. these exposures are having actual results, and it's been going on since I think my mom was first showing symptoms in the early 90s and didn't know it and was going to doctors, and they're telling her she's crazy or imagining things or she's anxious. And she was literally
and
reacting.
And she was anxious.
Yeah. Yeah, she absolutely
but
was.
But that wasn't the point. Yeah.
Yeah. So the exposure to Roundup and pesticides is breaking down our health, and then now we're consuming it. Now it's becoming part of our genetic material, and we're also even K2. I hadn't been until recently. I hadn't actually really watched the local news, but I have access to it in one of my day jobs at the lunchroom. And even on K2, they did a story the other day about. It was kind of a long, involved story about wild animals and diminishing populations. But basically, they're finding all of these herbicides and chemicals in animals. We're changing by releasing these things into the environment. We're changing their genetic material as well.
Well, and it's apparently the same sort of thing that is an advantage to keep fleas off of pets that is breaking down the bee colony.
I've heard so many theories, and probably they're all a little true, about why the bee colonies are collapsing. And I mean, when you look at how many things, how many chemicals we've introduced into that system, there's probably multiple sources for it. Yeah. And that's a serious issue. I mean, that's a whole nother show.
Well, they banned, specifically in France, it was Bayer, not Monsanto, that had the Poncho and the Gaucho systemic pesticides, which is basically the equivalent of BT. It grows from within the seed through the plant. And about a year after they banned that there, their bee population actually started increasing.
That and this was one of the early things. I mean, it was star-linked corn, I think, was the first thing that BT was introduced to, and that was, again, late 90s. There's been a lot of focus on it, but in this country, it seems like we've made very little headway. It's just, well, it's accepted, right? What could be wrong with BT, cotton, and corn? Aside from the fact that we're now missing butterflies and bees. And, you know, when we miss butterflies and bees, we miss pollination, then we have crop failure, then we have famine. Details. we don't need to look that far down the line, I guess, at this point, I'm sure. So, we go on. But again, underscoring the importance of standing up to corporations that decide that they know how to run the food supply better than, say, you know, millennia of evolution. Not really looking at long-term health effects for the planet or for ourselves.
Or those pesky folks that saved their own seeds and didn't have to buy them from Monsanto.
Oh, yeah, well, there's that.
Is there not a huge seed collecting network now? Oh, I'm looking at all of you. I'm sure if you Google that, you will find it. I hear about the seed collectors, and they're all in touch with each other to keep some seeds alive.
I know Vandana Shiva does that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's a big network in the United States, too.
So let's go ahead.
We've got callers.
So many. And questions still, too. So let's go ahead and talk to LJ. Good morning, LJ.
Hey, honey. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Oh, good deal. How was the vacation in Mexico?
Oh, we'll talk later. Yeah, it was. Let's just say it was good, and I actually managed to talk to some folks about farm issues, which, you know, I got to say, a couple years ago, farmers in the area I was at, I have family in Jalisco and Nayarit, and a few years ago, they were actually, this is going to help. Our poor farmers really need a leg up. We have these, really competitive issues that we have to deal with. We have to increase our crops. And I was very encouraged to see that this year, in fact, those conversations were, we are trying to get our farmers to understand once they start taking those seeds, they'll be hooked forever. We're starting seed, we are reigniting our seed banks. I mean, you know, they'd only fallen away from the traditional ways for a few years, and they were already scrambling to get back, you know, and I was very heartened by that.
Thank goodness.
Okay, there's my Mexican vacation update.
Yes. Thank you very much. Just a couple of points, Ani, and I don't know whether it's been covered or not, but it's my understanding that Monsanto is protected now from lawsuits. If you eat their frankenfood and if you get sick or you should die from eating it, there's no way that they can be sued. I wonder if we can talk about that. And I'm wondering if we can also talk about the fact that the head of the Food and Drug Administration was a big mucky muck in Monsanto.
That's Michael Taylor.
Yeah, Michael Taylor, good work for Monsanto. He's now in charge of the Food and Drug Administration.
Is the Department of Agriculture.
Anyway, one of them. And so, do you think that there might be a little conflict of interest? Nah.
No, not at all.
No, not here. And I just wanted you guys to know that the Elders Caucus of Occupy will be at the demonstration tomorrow.
Awesome.
Bless the Elders Caucus.
You guys rock. You Elder Caucus, you rock.
Thank you.
I look forward to seeing you.
And to quote Emma, if we can't dance, we're not coming to your revolution.
That's right. That's right. We'll see you tomorrow, LJ.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Or Molly Ivins, freedom fighting takes a lot of beer, she said.
Molly Ivins, she's a smart woman, she was. So there are so many things to talk about. I see that we are quickly running out of time. This is about the fastest hour in radio history. And so with only about 15 minutes left, details of the march tomorrow again, let's make sure people know what's happening, and we can talk a little bit more about unpacking that, speakers and that sort of thing.
Well, at 11 a.m., we'll start the rally off with the Portland Raging Grannies. They're going to perform and sing.
So excited.
At 11:15, we're going to have Daniel Shea from the Veterans for Peace. He's going to tell his story that's related to Agent Orange. At 11:20, we're going to have Paul Cienfuegos, the community rights activist. 11:35, we'll have Scott Bates, the director of GMO Free Oregon. And at 11:45, it'll be Julia DeGraw, the Northwest organizer of Food and Water Watch. At 12 p.m., we are going to kick off the march, and Love Bomb Go-Go will head that. 1 p.m., we'll be welcomed back by a local...
Can we back up to Love Bomb Go-Go?
Yeah.
Explain. As somebody who's never heard of Love Bomb Go-Go, and now I'm intrigued.
They're like a marching band.
Marching band. That's what I would imagine.
Yeah.
All right. Carry
Pretty
on.
Funky.
Cool.
Horns, drums.
We like that.
1 p.m., Bloco Alegria, which is like a samba ensemble, will welcome us back to the park. 1:20, we'll have Andy Westland, who's a board member of Organically Grown, and he's a farmer. And then at 1:30, Andrew Still, who's a seed producer as well as a farmer. 1:45, Elizabeth Swagger, she's the director of the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign. 1:50, Rebecca Lerner, and she's a author and urban forager. 1:55, they'll have Mary Nichols, director of GMO Free Portland, and then 2 p.m., I will say thank you to everybody.
And say go ho!
Yes, right. Or wherever else we may choose to go on a Saturday afternoon.
Radical cheerleaders?
Well, we haven't gotten in contact with them. Okay. They were brought up at a meeting.
Maybe there'll be a spontaneous showing.
Yeah, if you guys are out there, come on down, please.
I want to throw it out there because it has certainly been thrown around to me a little bit, and that is the march tomorrow. You're permitted, yeah?
Yes.
You've got a permit. What's your relationship at this moment with the police? And I'm just going to throw it back there for folks that look at our Facebook page or my Facebook page. There's some concern about how you may be dealing with the police tomorrow.
The police will actually be there giving us rolling street closures. And they were contacted when we applied for the permit for the three Portland parks.
They get automatically contacted when you get a permit.
They get contacted. Then they contacted me. We had a meeting with them to discuss what was going on. Basically, we just told them what our program is and that they're going to be there. And we're going to work together to ensure that this is a safe march for families and children, and there's no conflict between us and the police.
So I guess it's that the idea of working together that may be concerning a few folks that are in the activist community who
right.
I know and love. You know, so I'm not, you know, there's always the immediate, what's the word I'm looking for?
Mistrust.
No, that's not the word. The immediate idea that somebody who is saying something that's just like, oh, kind of jarring, kind of like, that's off, that's not what we're talking about. That's upsetting to just say, well, they're trolling, they're just causing trouble, they're just doing this or that. Actually, that's a really good friend of mine. So they're not trolling. They're not, yeah, they do cause trouble, but that's their job. So I'm just wanting to put it out there, you know, that when you say cooperating with the police, you mean you've got a march permit.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of that process with every march permit, police do escort.
Mm-hmm.
Anything beyond that?
No.
I mean,
planning on turning anyone in that might yell louder or something?
No.
Okay. I want to give you an opportunity to actually say that on the air. And I also want to, I guess, have the opportunity to challenge. Because, in fact, we have seen in Portland area marches a huge difference in how one is, you know, how those marches organized and coordinated, you know, and some of them are brilliantly done and some of them I have some issue with. Doesn't mean the issues that they're working on aren't valid, but it's, you know, sometimes an organizational thing. So I just wanted to, in the interest of full disclosure, have a chance to talk about that for tomorrow so you can just actually straight from your organizing mouths talk about what you're doing and how you're working with the police.
Oh, this particular person asked me on the event page if what would happen to people if they committed violence. And I was like, well, I would assume they would be arrested. And I think they took that as I was going to call the police if somebody did something, and then I was like, well, are you planning on doing violence? What's going on?
Right.
So
that's some good background. I have a feeling, first of all, and this is a show, again, a whole nother topic, right up there with Bee Collapse, what is violence? I could probably do 3 hours on that easy, and I'm not sure I would take guests. Just what is violence, I think, is an important question. But true enough, if somebody does something that is, quote, against the law, whether you intercede or not, police will be there, right? So
right. It's
just like that happens, which I think gets us back to Judy Berry. Everyone know Judy Berry? This is actually the 23rd anniversary of Judy Berry being bombed. She was an Earth First activist, her and Daryl Cherney. I know I'm digressing, but I'll get around to the point soon. I did want to mention that this is the 23rd anniversary of that bombing, and give a shout out to Judy, who passed away in 98, but she was a friend of mine. And she had a very clear praxis that she would talk about the important difference in any movement between day work and night work. I don't want to go a whole lot further into that at this point because it does sort of detract, but I think that that is an important concept for all activists to be aware of and familiar with. There are day actions. Those are permits. Those are working out to get some public exposure, to educate, to look at broad mobilizations, that sort of thing. And then there's night work. Those are the things that you may not want a whole lot of public attention on that just sort of happen, maybe without being attributed to people. So with that in mind, we'll move on. We've got more callers, and let's take them. Let's see. We have, who is that next caller?
Could be Ann.
Yes, it looks like that. Good morning.
Could very well be Ann.
Okay. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for organizing this march, Tiffany. Obviously, you've struck a chord here. I just want to talk about a very local issue related to Monsanto, is the use of Roundup in our parks.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Rebecca Lerner is going to address that when she speaks. But what I wanted to point out is that I've been working on the city budget, the conversation, I guess you'd call it. And the city continues to lay off parks maintenance workers to eliminate their positions, basically. And when you cut down on the workers, the pesticide use goes up. And so there is a connection between,
So we're paying more to Monsanto for Roundup and less to humans for their jobs.
For doing a job.
Is that
right.
What you're saying?
And so hand weeding. And the other thing is they are so behind. The parks workers are so behind.
That's absolutely true.
They've been cut 5 years in a row, so they are down so low that they said it's just out of control, that they can't keep up with maintaining our parks. So I just wanted to put a shout out to uniting the environmental, people who are concerned about it on the environmental level, and this totally overlaps with a labor issue.
Yeah.
That we need to advocate for more parks workers, not less, and keeping absolutely, I say zero pesticide use in our parks.
Great points.
And really, really good. And it reminds me again of 99 with the WTO, and we saw, and I will always remember the headline, Teamsters and Turtles Together.
Yeah. It's a great overlap. And
it is. And again, back to Judy Berry, that is one of the things that made her especially dangerous as an organizer, was that she would draw those connections between labor and the environment, because in fact, it is the same issue.
Yeah.
It is really all based in corporate greed and corporate control. And the more that we can see our commonalities, the quicker we can get this, one.
Juggernaut moving, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We can untie this.
And, And I would love to see more shows on Monsanto. I have a whole bunch to say about the international use
of it.
And resistance in Mexico and resistance in Haiti. So let's do more.
Let's do it. You know how to get a hold of us.
PositivelyRevolting@gmail.com. No problem.
Okay. And
thank you.
Thanks again, Tiffany.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. And I want to thank you both for doing really good work in organizing this. I'm excited that there are 49 countries, you said, 49 countries, 400 actions tomorrow focusing on Monsanto. I think that that is huge. I want to remind folks that coming up today on KABU, not only is this the 23rd anniversary of Judy Berry's bombing, but it's also the anniversary of the Vanport flood. So we have some special programming looking at the 65th anniversary of Vanport and how that has changed this area forever. At 9 o'clock, there's a look back in the past and present of racial relations in the city of Portland and the state of Oregon. This, as I mentioned, this week marks the 65th anniversary of the Vanport flood, which was essentially Portland's Hurricane Katrina. The flood displaced 18,500 shipyard workers and their families who were living in housing projects constructed by multimillionaire Henry Kaiser. At 9 o'clock, we'll hear part of a video documentary about Vanport and the interview with Portland State University professor Michael McGregor, hosted by KABU's Sequoia White. At 9:45, Vanport flood survivor Ed Washington will be joining us in the studio to talk about his experience as an African-American growing up in Portland. At 10:15, we'll hear a program from the 2011 that was originally aired in 2011. It was hosted by KABU's Cecil Prescott about God's Lake housing project in Northwest Portland and its connections to Vanport. All of the morning special programs will conclude with a discussion led by Portland State University Professor Walida Amarisha on the topic, why are there so few black people in Oregon? That happens from 11 till noon this morning. So you want to stay tuned to all of that, and then public affairs picks up again in the afternoon with Democracy Now! At 4, the evening news at 5, and at 6 o'clock, Bread and Roses. So much coming up on KABU. We have Jeanne for one very last...
Janine. Hello, Janine.
For a very, very last quick comment.
Yeah, it'll be quick. Has the Monsanto Protection Act been mentioned?
H.R. 933.
Is that what it is? I got an email from Senator Jeff Merkley about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. He is actually working to overturn the Monsanto Protection Act. And he also, on his website, has a petition that you can sign.
Yeah, I have the information for that if people want it. It's jeffmerkley.com/petition/Monsanto.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Thank you. And with that, we are just about out of time. So how do folks, one more time, connect up tomorrow and then maybe stay in touch for future?
We have an email address. It's marchagainstmonsantopdx@gmail.com.
Okay, that's a good one. And then once again, tell us at 11 o'clock tomorrow.
At Holiday Park.
Lots of goings on. Great music also, it sounds like.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's going to be a great time.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
So it's from 11 o'clock till 2.
Yeah,
with 2. A march somewhere in the middle there.
Yes.
Right around noon.
Yes.
All right. Thank you both so much, Cassie and Tiffany, for joining us this morning. I really appreciate what you have to bring us and your efforts in organizing.
Thank you.
And yes, let's continue this trend in talking about Monsanto and other corporate giants trying to control our lives. Always important to see what we're up against. Absolutely. And with that, we'll continue to be positively revolting. We hope you will, too. And we will have links to much of this information on our Facebook page and our KABU web program page, where you can find us at kbo.fm/positivelyrevolting on Facebook, facebook.com/positivelyrevolting. There's a trend. But we will try to put up some of those resources we talked about early in the show, such as GMO Free Portland and other sources like that. So thank you both so much, and we'll keep the information going.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
What would you have instead? No, this is it.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to help sponsor the Triangle production version of Ave Maria, a musical about the 20th century's most famous Greeks, Aristotle Onassis and Maria Callas, starring Bruce Blanchard and Amy Jo Holliday. The musical will take place at The Sanctuary, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. Ave Maria runs from May 2nd to May 26th. More information and tickets may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
The 2013 Yogathon is here and KBOO is a co-sponsor. Living Yoga is holding its fourth annual Yogathon during the months of April and May. Individuals and groups are creating their own personal yoga challenges. They're attending classes at several participating yoga studios in the Portland area, and friends and family are sponsoring their efforts. Living Yoga is awarding prizes to the top individual and team. All of this is to help benefit Living Yoga, a nonprofit program bringing yoga to people in drug and alcohol recovery, incarceration, or who are accessing community transitional services. More information about this six-week-long event can be found at living-yoga.org.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO, Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
This morning on KBOO, we take a look back at the past and present of race relations in the city of Portland and the state of Oregon. This week marks the 65th anniversary of the Vanport flood, which was essentially Portland's Hurricane Katrina. Many people were displaced during that flood, and many of them African American. We begin with a video documentary about Vanport produced by the Oregon Historical Society, and this will be followed by an interview with Professor Michael McGregor from Portland State University. Stay tuned.
Portland, Oregon is a community with 2 million people in its metropolitan area. Nestled on the banks of the Columbia River, it is a thriving city with a cosmopolitan reputation and a diverse population. However, before World War II, Portland was drastically different. As the city struggled to recover from the effects of the Great Depression, it was also dealing with an increasingly racist population. By 1940, openly hostile Oregonians had driven out nearly half the 3,000 African Americans that once lived in the state. It was after the outbreak of World War II when Portland began to change. A man named Henry James Kaiser started the Oregon Shipbuilding Company, constructing the Liberty ships used in the war. As the ships rolled out, thousands of workers rolled in. Electricians, steelworkers, and welders came from across the country to lend their efforts to the war. But with a severe housing shortage in Portland, the workers were having difficulty finding a place to live. In 1942, construction began on what was then the largest housing project in the world. In less than a year, Vanport City was created. As workers continued to arrive, drawn by the promise of jobs and housing in Vanport City, Portland's racial profile began to change as well. An estimated 7,000 of the newcomers were African Americans. they more than tripled Oregon's black population. By 1943, Vanport had become the second largest city in Oregon. More than 40,000 people lived there, nearly 20% African American.
Oregon's black population was kept artificially small because in the pioneer period, blacks were legally excluded from residence in Oregon.
My father came from a situation where in Portland, Oregon, you could get a racial slur, but in the Deep South, you could get lynched. So, you know, he was looking at it kind of in a relative sense. And he thought Oregon was a place worth being.
The highest that a black person could aspire to, if they weren't going to be a professional in the black community, was to be a waiter or a shoeshine boy, or perhaps to work as a porter on the railroads that served the Oregon communities.
Portland, compared to those places, was the place to be for the African-American population. We had newspapers here. We had the NAACP, had a lot of social organizations. We had churches. So it was kind of like a concentrated place.
Race was very important to Oregon life, and race could be a destructive element, but at the same time, because the population was small and the community was cohesive, black people who grew up in Oregon could expect to live here and have a fairly comfortable life compared to other parts of the United States.
In December of 1941, America had entered World War II. After the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, much of the racial tension in Portland, as well as the rest of the country, went on the back burner as Americans united to fight a common enemy.
During the war, that was the most unified era that this country has ever known and will ever know again. Everybody had the same objective, to win the war.
Everybody had one thing on their mind, that was making ships to beat Japan, okay? And it was one of these praise the Lord and pass the ammunition things.
During World War II, the traditional source of labor for much of the country's industry, young white males, were on the battlefields of the war all over the world.
With an increased need for labor, Henry Kaiser sent out a call for workers beyond Oregon.
They